Avodah Zarah, Perek Dalet, Mishnah Yud 4:10. And this Mishnah considers various cases where we're not sure how to treat Jewish wine because it came into some sort of questionable contact with an idolater. So the first case is Ovid Kochavim Shenimtza Omid Betzad HaBor Shel Yayin. A Jew has his wine, it's kosher wine, it's sitting inside the bor, the cistern, and it's fermenting there, and then he discovers that an idolater is standing beside the cistern. He didn't see the Gentile touch it, but it's very possible he did. So the Mishnah's answer to this case is predicated on the basic assumption that a person is very concerned about his reputation, that he should be concerned to be a thief, so he shouldn't look like a criminal or a crook. And that being the case, under normal circumstances, we're going to assume that this idolater standing by the Jewish wine would never touch the wine, because he doesn't want to look like, you know, he's doing something untoward, that he's being a thief and the like. That said, if you'd have a good excuse why he'd be sampling or touching the wine, like, for example, he had a claim on that wine, then it wouldn't be the case. He wouldn't be afraid to touch it or maybe do a libation with it, because he'll just say, if he gets caught, he'll say, listen, this is my wine, or I have a claim on this wine, and I'm just sort of sampling, I'm checking it out. That being the case, says the Mishnah, im yesh lo alav milva, if the idolater had made a loan to the Jew who owns this wine, and therefore this wine is serving essentially as collateral for that loan. So therefore, if he was caught touching, sipping, whatevering the wine, the Gentile would say, yeah, because this is about to become my wine, the loan is overdue, or it's coming due tomorrow, I'm checking my collateral and the like. So then he wouldn't lose face, and therefore we have to assume that he may have touched it. That being the case, usur, we will treat the wine as forbidden, meaning it's usur bahana. The Jew can do nothing, he has to assume that a Gentile touched it and treat it strictly. However, ein lav milva, if the adulterer standing by had no financial claim or future claim potentially on this wine, therefore he had no business in touching the wine, then we'll assume he wouldn't touch it and didn't touch it because he's afraid of his reputation, and therefore mutter, the wine remains permitted to drink. Okay, that's kind of case one of the Mishnah. Now, case two of the Mishnah, we'll have two A, B, C, D, four cases where a idolater is coming into contact with the wine, but it doesn't seem to be for the sake of doing a libation. So the first case is Nafal Labor Va'ala. The first case is that the idolater fell into the cistern, and he drowned in there, actually. So when he comes up, he's brought out, he's dead. So there, we won't assume that the Gentile was busy doing any libations on his way down to drowning. So it won't be considered to be Yayin Nesach. There's no restriction like that. That assumes, of course, that he drowned. If he came up alive, we'll assume for sure he thanked his idol on the way out and did a little splash of libation. That would, of course, make it Asur Bahana. But in this case, it won't be Asur Bahana because we assume he didn't do a libation. It will, however, remain Asur Lishtiya, that you can't drink it, because it's still Stam Yenam if a Gentile touches Jewish wine, as we already said, and we'll see more in this Mishnah again. So we have to have a second rabbinic issue, which is to prevent intermarriage with their daughters, we don't drink any wine ever that was touched by a Gentile. And that being the case, it would still be Asur Bishtiya, but not Asur Bahana if he fell in and drowned. Case 2b is Umedado Bekaneh. He was measuring it, like let's say he's an employee and he's working there, and he's measuring the wine using a reed, like a measuring stick, let's call it. Again, here we have a Gentile touching Jewish wine, but ostensibly not for the sake of anything other than for doing his job. He's measuring, he's not doing libations. So again, the din will be the same, that we would make it now he had indirect contact, and therefore becomes forbidden to drink, but not Asur Bahana, so the Jew could again sell his wine to another non-Jew. The Shulchan Aruch actually brings two opinions based on the Machlokas and the Rishonim. If it's important that it was done with the Kaneh, that it was indirect contact, like I said before, there are those who learn that if the Jew is the Gentile is sticking his hands directly into the wine cistern, but he's doing it for the sake of measuring, again, it would make a difference. It's just simply, then we have a reason why he touched it, and therefore it's only just Tam Yenam and Asur Bishtiya, but not Asur Bahana. Fine. If that's the case, the question would be, well, then why did it say a Kaneh? It's explicitly he did it with a with a reed to do a measuring device. So it's indirect contact. So the answer is we'll see then all four of these cases, these actually were events that occurred and were passed on by the Bezdin. So it could just be that the actual case was one with the Kaneh, but that's not essential to the story. So two opinions brought in the Shulchan Aruch about that. The third case, called 2C, is Hitiz es Hatzira b'Kaneh. He flicked away a wasp that was on the surface of the wine using a reed. Again, indirect contact. Clearly, again, here his activities have to do with protecting the wine, not doing libations. So same as the previous case, it would be now forbidden to get to drink the wine, but it's permitted to get benefit, so you could sell it to a Gentile. And the fourth case, 2D, if you will, is Oshahaya mitapeach al pi chavis murutachat. He is like tamping down. He's patting the top of a bubbling vat of wine. What's happening here is as wine ferments, so it bubbles. Carbon dioxide comes out of the fermentation process, and that foam comes on top. It could overflow, etc. So by pushing down the bubbles or touching the bubbles, those bubbles pop. First of all, just physically being touched, and second of all, the oils in the hand spread and make the bubbles not die down. Works with a beer foaming head of beer and the like as well. So the point is, again, you have now the biggest of the four cases, the biggest chiddush of the four is, again, you have a idolater directly touching with his hand the vat of wine, and still we're going to say it's not usher bahana, because clearly he was doing something for the service of the wine, as like an employee and the like, and not for the sake of potentially doing a libation, so we only say it's usher fashtia, estam yenam, but not usher bahana. So the Mishnah says explicitly, in all four cases, b'chol elu hayamaseh, all four of these scenarios did in fact happen, v'amru, and they paskind, the Bezdin, the Sanhedrin, the Chora, yimacher, it may be sold, meaning it can't be drunk, so it's now usher for shtia, because it's tam yenam, but it's not yai nesech, and therefore it's mutar bana, you could sell it to another Gentile. Now, on these cases, these four cases, 2A, B, C, D, v'Rabbi Shimon matir, Rabbi Shimon is lenient. He says the wine is permitted to be drunk. The reason why is because Rabbi Shimon holds that while there is a dinder abanan called stam yenam, you can't, any wine that was touched by a Gentile becomes forbidden for a Jew to drink, but that assumes that the wine belonged to the Gentile, according to Rabbi Shimon. If it's a Jewish wine, that just Jewish-owned but touched by a Gentile, that alone doesn't make it forbidden in terms of chas, in terms of benos lichem, in terms of intermarriage. So Rabbi Shimon says that the wine would remain permitted to drink. The halacha does not follow him. The fourth and final case, the third occult, and final case is, and let me explain it outside first. The case is that there's an idolater, he's standing by a cistern of wine, he gets enraged by something, he takes a barrel of wine, an empty barrel, and he throws it into the cistern, causing the cistern of the wine and cistern to splash, okay? So now, there you have the Gentile moving the wine, certainly not for the sake of libations, it's just sort of like getting out of the frustration. So the question is that going to restrict the wine? The answer is for sure not. Now, the Gemara speaks out that if he literally threw the barrel and there was, the barrel went flying and fell into the bore, the cistern, of course, there's no chiddush. Of course, the wine remains permitted because there's no contact, even direct, indirect contact between the non-Jew and the wine, right? That's just kocho, just his energy that he invested in the barrel as it flew across the sky. But so what? That would not make it usher ever. So the case of our Mishnah has to be where the Gentile essentially is shoving this barrel in, at least for an instant, on one side of the barrel is his hand or his foot kicking it or anything like that. And on the other side of the barrel, there's already wine touching it. So it means for a moment, he's indirectly moving the wine through the force of the barrel. One hand on the far side of the barrel is moving wine on the other side. So there you have a situation of indirect contact. So indirect contact coupled with no intention of touching the wine at all, unlike the previous cases where he was intentionally sticking in the reed to get rid of the wasp or to measure it and the like, here he's got indirect contact, but he has no intention of touching wine. He's just trying to, kick this barrel or throw the barrel or shove the barrel. So then the wine remains mutter. Okay, and the Mishnah, the words inside read as follows. Natal es hachavit. If the Gentile took a hold of some empty barrel, vizarka b'chamato labor, and he threw it out of his enrage into the cistern. Zehaya ma'aseh, this very event did occur, v'hichshiru, and the Bezdin permitted the wine cell to be drunk. For the reason I said before, there was, even if there was indirect contact, it wasn't for the sake of touching wine at all, and therefore it remains totally permitted.